So obstacle number four are habits. Very simply said, people with good financial habits are often richer than people with poor financial habits. Most people are actually lazy, although very busy. So one of the habits that people have is by staying busy rather than changing because they're too lazy to change. And that's a very bad habit to get into. I've done it this way for the last 10 years. I'm going to continue to do it for the next 10 years. That could be a very bad habit. So one of the most important habits my rich dad taught me was the idea of continually educating myself, updating my education. Again, not to sound redundant, you can expose yourself to multitudes of different ideas, whether you agree with them or not. In the information age or the idea age, it's knowledge that makes you wealthy, but new knowledge, not necessarily old knowledge. So one of the most important habits I would say that is vital for the rest of your life is the habit of continually changing and updating the data, the information, and the ideas in your head. There's another habit I would like to talk about, and that's the habit that comes from culture or family or for beliefs. For instance, in my family, it was the habit of making sure that you didn't get ahead of anybody else, that a habit of not talking about money at the dinner table, that the idea of habitually saying that money was evil and the rich people were bad. And those are cultural habits. The New York Times just recently said you cannot end poverty with education because the environment that poor people come from is a lot stronger than the school system. So for many of us came from families where the point of view was that there was not enough money. And one of the biggest differences I had was I had two fathers to compare with. One family or one father came from the point of view of not enough money, and the other family and father came from the point of view of too much money. Their habits were completely different. And so the reason I was able to make the transition from a poor kind of background or middle class background to a wealthy background was simply by observing the habits that two different families had. My rich dad's friends were all bankers, accountants, attorneys. I used to sit in his restaurant, sip a Coke, and I would sit there listening to the language of very affluent or wealthy people, bankers, accountants, insurance people, and all this. My school teacher dad, they drove old Volkswagens and beat up old cars. My rich dad's parties, they were very affluent. They were Cadillacs and Mercedes and things like this, and they spent their money differently. They had different value systems. They actually took better care of their health. They got massages often. They took vitamins, and they actually were healthier than many of the poor people. So I began to notice the habitual patterns of people that ultimately allow you to be rich or poor. That's why I really speak out against the idea of frugality for money's sake. In other words, just to acquire a lot of money to wind up rich and cheap is not my idea of wealth. That is a poor person's idea of getting rich. Obstacle number five is one of my favorite subjects, and it's called arrogance, because it has been a very bad habit of mine to be arrogant. And I've noticed that when I've become very successful, I tend to get arrogant or become a legend in my own mind. And every time I'm arrogant, my wife always reminds me that, where she can, I can smell the diesel fuel, which means I'm about to be hit by the Mack truck because I'm so arrogant. And what arrogance really is ego plus ignorance. Money has a way of making you think that you're the legend. I've had many friends who became the legend, or as I said earlier, we were all Wonder Boys at one time, and the next week everybody just called us boy out there because we owed everybody money. So for me personally, the word arrogance has some very painful connotations, and my wife, you know, that's, I think that's what a wife is for, is to remind you when you're on your high horse, because people on the high horse often run into a low branch. And so that's why, especially in this rapidly changing information age world, I think arrogance does not have its place. I think right now what we need is confidence, humility, and the willingness to learn. And there's a big difference between self-confidence and arrogance and humility. A friend of mine, his name is Keith, who was in the MBA program when Ray Kroc spoke there, he always said this to me. He says, in Texas, the rule is, if you've done it, it ain't bragging. So there's a difference about talking about what you're doing and bragging about what you're doing also. The other part about it is that arrogance means that your mind has closed, that you're now running a lot on ego, and you're not willing to learn something new. There's a saying my rich dad used to have. He says, if you're confident, you'll always be rich if you have the right tools. He said, if you really wanted to invest in IBM, what he suggested I do is get a job with IBM as a janitor and hang out as a janitor around IBM, and at least that way you would be an insider instead of an outsider investor. And if you're really humble and you're open to learning, but you're confident, even as a janitor, you will pick up more just observing and learning from everything going around you as to whether or not you should invest in IBM or sell IBM at that moment. And so those are some of the distinctions between arrogance and confidence. I am more and more confident the more mistakes I make, because if I learn from them, I gain confidence. Many people who make mistakes say, I'll never do that again, and what they're actually doing is losing confidence. So there's very fine lines in there. There's another aspect about confidence versus arrogance. Is I know there's some people listening to this tape saying, well, he's an arrogant, you know what, or... And I get that a lot. And all I'm doing is faithfully saying what I have done. As my friend Keith says, if you've done it, it ain't bragging. But just because I've done it doesn't necessarily mean it was that easy doing it. And I had to be humble enough to learn how to do it. So the final point I want to make is that many people say, you can't do that. For instance, when I talk about how I do certain deals or certain investments, especially when I'm in Canada or Australia or New Zealand, they say, ah, mate, you can't do that here. And what they fail to realize is that when you point your finger forward and you say, you can't do that, always remember there's three fingers pointing back at you. So just because you think somebody can't do it, it may mean that you can't do it and that person can do it. So an arrogant person will say, man, he can't do that. Just because you can't do it doesn't mean that somebody else can't. And so if you're saying that that person can't do that, that's a very arrogant position. Obstacle number 6, it's a very important obstacle, and that's the power of disappointment. And I think this power of disappointment really falls into Rich Dad's secret the most. Because Rich Dad often said to me, he says, it is the moment of your lowest disappointment was when you really find out who you are. Many times when people make a mistake, they say, oh, I'll never do that again. And at that point, instead of using that disappointment to go on to a magical evolution, they use that disappointment to diminish themselves, and they wall themselves off. Or in relationships, you hear people say, I'll never love again, or all men are you-know-what, or all women are you-know-what. And in that disappointment, they actually diminish themselves. So Rich Dad often taught me, he says, that you really find out who you are in your moments of greatest despair, and can you move forward and make it a valuable experience for yourself? Speaking from my experience of making money, and most of my wisdom gained has been because I've lost money. That's where I gained my greatest wisdom, but they also came from my greatest disappointments. I also want to say that tomorrow I could be back to being broke again. I am confident to know that I'll probably make a few more mistakes. But the value, or the thing that gives me the confidence, is I know that if I lose it again, I'll only come back stronger and smarter. And that's how I handle the great obstacle of disappointment. I'll be humble enough to say to you, I can lose it, and I can make it back. Very often, some of the teachers, the greatest teachers out there, are really preachers. In other words, some of the people talking about relationships have no relationships. So I humbly say to you, I talk to you today about my experiences of making money, but most of those experiences came out of how I handled something we all are faced with, and that's what happens when we become disappointed in our lives. And how we handle that disappointment ultimately determines the quality of our lives. So my rich dad taught me how to handle disappointment rather than avoid disappointment. He said the best way to handle disappointment is, number one, expect to be disappointed. And if you expect to be disappointed, you won't be disappointed when it happens. And that oftentimes applies into how people invest. I hear people come out to me and say, I'm going to buy this stock and it's going to go to $100. And my rich dad often said, it's not how high a stock will go that counts. Your first consideration is how low will it go. So if you factor in the fact that it could go down from 50 to 25, in other words, you factor in the disappointment factor, you'll know whether it's a good investment or not. And all too often, a rookie investor only sees the sky rather than the ground below them. The next part about it is have a mentor standing by. I think it's one of the most important things I've had, is somebody who's already gone through that disappointment. All too often, we look at our problems as the problem or the biggest problem. In other words, if you want to find out how to climb a molehill, ask somebody who's climbed Mount Everest, and they will give you another point of view on what the molehill you're climbing is. So that's why oftentimes when I say to people, why don't you try this? Oh, no, what if I fail? What if I don't make it? I say, I'll be here to help. No, you don't. And the problem, again, goes back to that idea that I have to do it on my own. And I'll say it because it's worth saying. All too often, people focus on the B side and the I side, the business owner and investor side, from the point of view they learned in school. They have to take tests on their own. In the real world is a cooperative world. You do it as a team. You do it with friends. You do it with friends who want to pull you along. And the reason your six friends around you are very important, or are they the friends that you want to eventually be like one day? Do you look up to them? Do you respect them? Do you want to grow into that kind of person? Or are they the kind of person that if you try and leave the nest, they'll pull you back in? The Hawaiians have this word called the ohiki. The ohiki means black crab. You'll see the black crabs running all over the rocks. And they say all too often people act like black crabs. In other words, you catch a bunch of black crabs and you put them in this gallon can, and they'll be clinking along, making a lot of noise. And finally, we're not going anywhere. We're making a lot of noise. And finally, one smart crab looks up and says, hey, we're not getting anywhere clinking around the bottom here. Maybe we should climb over the top. And then, nah, don't be silly. So finally, one crab jumps up and it gets one little leg over the edge of the can and starts to pull. And he gets over the top. He says, hey, look, there's a whole new world over there. And what the black crabs do, instead of boosting the crab up, they pull the crab down. And that's the Hawaiian legend about the ohiki. And they said, most people hang out with people that pull them down, not push them up. And another part about handling disappointment is be kind to yourself. When I ask people to point to the person who is toughest on you, most people point to themselves. And I think that is one of the tragic flaws of most people who are unsuccessful, because we take things too personally. You know, we think that a failure is a noun, not a verb. In other words, failure is something we've done, and at least you've taken action. But most people think it's you, the noun, the person. So failure is a verb, not a noun. So every time I make a and I've made tragic, you know, when you lose millions of dollars of your investors or some of the stupid things I've done in my life, I give myself the complimentary 3 days to beat myself up. But it's just an indulgence I get into, calling beat myself up, feel sorry for myself, and know that within 3 days, it'll be over. And having that perspective helps me get through that period, knowing that it's just a phase I'm going through. It's not where I'm going to. So really be kind to yourself. And the last part is tell the truth. When you make a mistake, what most people do is they first lay blame. Oh, it's my wife's fault, or it's the economy's fault, or it's my stockbroker's fault, or it's my attorney's fault, or it's the other guy's fault. For instance, one day I got hit by a car. If I blamed the other person, I really learned nothing. Now, what caused me to get into this traffic accident? And there's nothing big or wrong with it. The other part people justify. They say, oh, well, I didn't really want to be rich anyway. Or the third part is that they quit. And that's the worst part about disappointment. Instead of getting the magic of it, which is Rich Dad's secret, they get close and then they quit. They say, well, you know, this old story of the miner who stopped 1 foot from striking gold. What many people do is they quit too early. Now, on the flip side of that is you have to know when to quit also. But those are the things I've noticed that people who let disappointment beat them is oftentimes they say it's darkest before the dawn. And I have tremendous faith in the Great Spirit that oftentimes when it's darkest, it's just about to get good. Many times when you fight in a family, what people do is they leave the room rather than stick it out and wait till it gets better. When they talk about brainstorming, they say for a new idea to enter the company, people start talking and then opposing ideas come up and then it diverges, it goes out, and then conflict builds. And a lot of times people quit because, oh, conflict is bad. We must be more civilized. We must be human. And they quit at conflict and they pretend to be nice people. Hi, have a nice day. And they hold this grudge and they stab them in the back later on in the company. So what I always say to people, if you're in a fight and you're going to get into a fight, stick it out. Because just as it gets really bad, it's about to get really good. And so those are some of the secrets I learned about how to handle disappointment. I'd like to move on to the action steps for step 6, overcoming the obstacles to wealth. Would you take a moment to look at or review or tell the truth about which of these obstacles are most in your way right now? Number 1 being fear, 2 cynicism, 3 laziness, 4 bad habits, 5 arrogance, and 6 disappointment. Which of those 6 would you say are probably your biggest obstacles for you achieving wealth right now? And then take action. Some of the steps you can take, number 1, is be willing to make mistakes. Take baby steps. Don't, you know, do it all in one shot. Like I said, the way to become a great achiever is to achieve a little bit every single day. And that's fundamentally what I do. That's why I listen to tapes every day. I look at some investments every day, and I just do it a little bit at a time, but I focus on it. Step number 2, when it comes to investing, I've noticed that your intelligence goes up the moment you put a little money down on the deal. People who don't put any money down don't learn that much. If you've ever noticed that when you know, let's say you have a football game on television and you say, well, which team do you want to win? The moment you say, I'll put $2 on team A, suddenly your interest in team A jumps emphatically and your interest in the game jumps up. So my rich dad always said to me, he says, the moment you put a little money down, your intelligence goes up. The average person is so afraid of losing, they don't put any money down. And then when it's too late, they bet the ranch. And when they bet the ranch at the top of the market, they eventually lose everything. So put a little money down when you want to begin learning. And number 3, again, always take action. Be aware of your friends, the people around you. Are they going to support you through this process or hold you back? As Nike's ad said, just do it. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. The only place where mistakes are bad is in school. And finally, step 7 of my rich dad's plan was the power of faith. And if you notice, much of this lesson or much of my rich dad's lesson has been on faith. Because in the end, it was my rich dad who left the most money to his church, to charities, and the things he believed in because he had faith. One of my other mentors or teachers was a man named Dr. R. Buckminster Fuller. And he said, all too often, people lose faith because they stay stuck in their thoughts and they don't look at the actions of God. And Bucky was not necessarily a religious, dogmatic individual. When he talked about God, he liked what the Indians said, the Great Spirit. So he said, when you look at nature, you'll get the truth. That was one of his statements. When you look at nature, you get the truth. So while most people think there's scarcity, Bucky said, always look at the sunset at night, because a sunset at night is always abundant. If you look at the things we need, our Maker or God has provided the things we need the most in the greatest of abundance. We need most for survival is air. And that's why there's so much air around us, so because nature wants us to survive. The second thing we need the most of is water. And that's why water is the second most abundant element or resource around us. The third is food. And we as a nation, our problem is being overweight. I know it's my problem, not the lack of food. So Bucky said, instead of believing in the dogma of other people, just look to nature or God for the answers, or the Great Spirit. And that's what he meant by faith. For me personally, I have tremendous faith in the Great Spirit, that regardless of what handicap or advantage you may have, we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses, and our job is to have faith and call on our strengths or make some of our weaknesses strengths and grow from that. So I've said this earlier and I'll say it again. If you look at what I'm most well known for, is I'm known as a writer. And the reality is I flunked out of high school my sophomore year as well as my senior year because I flunked English. I cannot write. I also flunked typing, yet I did type my books. The other subject I flunked was accounting, and today my cash flow games teach accounting. So the thing I'm saying to most people, Rich Dad's greatest secret was that the more mistakes you made, the greater faith you had in yourself, and the more you handled disappointment, the better the world would come to you. So what my Rich Dad taught me was how to take a mistake or take disappointment and make something better out of it. So the reason I flunked English and I flunked accounting and I couldn't type was primarily because they're extremely boring. And I think that's why most people don't like accounting and a lot of those other things. So what I did was I took that flaw and I made accounting and financial literacy fun, entertaining, and exciting. So that's how I took my Rich Dad's lessons and applied them to my own life. And so that's how we all can turn our, what people call our weaknesses, into our strengths. So I suspect there's some of you out there who are still saying, well, I can't do that, or that may work for him, but I don't have money, and you still haven't given me the answer, and, you know, he can do it, but maybe I can't do it. And those are all what I say are your, maybe your personal truths. But if those are your personal truths, they can also be your personal lies, because they may not be true. And part of the process of achieving what you want in your life is to take your personal lies and turn them into strengths. I think that's one of the most important things I can advise or encourage people to do. Our Maker, God, the Great Spirit, would not handicap you and in favor of anybody else. Our Great Spirit has given you strengths and weaknesses. And I think your job is to turn your weaknesses into strengths, and that is the process of life. So the action step for step 7, which is have faith, is a kind of a funny project. When I used to teach seminars, I used to talk about beliefs. And if you look at the word belief, what it really spells is B-E-L-I-E, B-E-L-I-E. So a belief is also a lie, be a lie. And so most people have this idea of good and bad, right and wrong, and they think that lying is bad. Well, the reality is most of us lie to ourselves all the time. When you say to yourself, I can't do that, that's a belief, but it's also a be a lie. Because you can do it, you know, you can do it if you really want to. You know you can save money if you really want to. You know you can work a little harder. You know you can study a few more tapes. You know you can go back to school if you really want to. But what most people do is they have these beliefs, which are really belies. So what I'd have people do is write down some of the beliefs or the belies that currently run their lives. So I have them pair up, have one person sit in front of the other person. So for you at home, this could be the bravest thing you can do is get your husband or wife or friend and say, look, I'm going to sit here and tell you all these lies about myself that I tell myself because they're beliefs. And you sit there and you say, I'm going to lie to you. Said, you know, I can't be rich because my wife is a poor spender. Or the reason I can't be rich is because I don't have a good education. And in other words, you sit there and you tell this person all these lies you tell yourself. And if you do it long enough, pretty soon you get sick and tired. And most people start cracking up because they realize these beliefs or these lies have been determining the boundaries of their lives. So instead of pretending that beliefs or lies are bad, embellish them. Find somebody to tell them to, and pretty soon you'll find the humor in them. And once you find the humor of them, you'll see the other side of the picture. And the moment you can start laughing about it, as my Buddhist friend says, laughter is the natural state of God. The moment you can laugh at yourself, you'll see the other side of yourself. Or in other words, the reason that birds can fly is they take themselves lightly. And the moment you can laugh at yourself, you've now taken yourself lightly. And the moment you can take yourself lightly, you can move on with your life. So if finding somebody else to talk to and tell all your lies to might be a little bit too high a gradient that you want to confront right now, turn to your print component and begin to write out the lies you say to yourself and look at them and begin to find out that you are lying to yourself and begin to laugh at them. And after you've written them down, then take a walk and start telling yourself all the lies you tell yourself called beliefs. And the moment you can begin to laugh at yourself, you begin to see the lighter side of yourself and move on with your life.
This is the end of side 11. Please fast forward the tape to the end to cue up side 12 for your listening.